All right, everyone. I think we're going to get started. Welcome. Welcome to our topic of today's session of Getting Unplugged. I'm Katie Latimer, Vice President of Research and Development for Ocean Spray, and I'll be your MC for today's session. So I have the best job ever. I get to lead a team of scientists and engineers who translate marketing concepts and ideas in health and wellness, and we translate them into great-tasting, meaningful products underpinned with science and technology to nourish and delight our consumers across the world. We are a family farmer-owned cooperative committed to creating, connecting farms to families for a better life. Ocean Spray is proud to be one of the sponsors today at Massachusetts Conference for Women, with over 50 women across our organization participating in today's events today. And I am so excited to be here with women leaders from across the state and the country to support this community and share my experience with my two daughters, Ashley, 24, and Sarah, 20, who grew up with the world at their fingertips, and they can certainly use some advice on how to unplug. So, without further ado, we have an amazing hour in store for you with a terrific panel of ladies, and we're going to be getting unplugged. And I'm thrilled to introduce a woman who is a perfect fit to lead our panel, none other than Tiffany Schlein, Emmy-nominated filmmaker, founder of the Webby Awards, and author of 24/6, The Power of Unplugging One Day a Week. Tiffany's work towards gender equality has led to significant accolades, such as being honored by Newsweek as one of the women shaping the 21st century. She has been selected for Albert Einstein's Foundation's upcoming book, Genius, 100 Visions of the Future. NPR named her 2015 UC Berkeley speech, Let It Ripple, as one of the best commencement speeches ever. And her films have premiered at Sundance, one of the top film festivals. Please join me in welcoming Tiffany Schlein.
Hello, I'm happy to be here. I'm from San Francisco. Any people from San Francisco here?
No, it's all Boston. It's beautiful. I loved the snow yesterday. It was so glorious. But let me ask you a question where I think I'll get some hands, is how many of you feel like you're on your screens too much? That was a very passionate hand raise. There was nothing tentative about that.
How often do you walk around any city street and look around and everyone's head is down? And you think, oh my gosh, this is horrible. And then your phone buzzes and your head's down too. It's like we've become ostriches putting our hands in the digital sand. We feel like we're so connected to everything, but we never look up to gain perspective. And it's not just outside. How many of you go into restaurants and everyone is on a device? Families, everyone is on a device. Senior citizen homes, everyone is on a device. When I founded the Webby Awards, I was in my 20s, and the hopes for the web back then in the 90s was that the web was going to connect people and ideas in completely new ways. I was so excited by it. I was like, this is the future. No one knew what the web was back then. There was only a handful of people online. And I was trying to explain to people the power of connecting the world's ideas. But I never imagined it would disconnect us so much from the people and ideas right in front of us. About 11 years ago, I was living a very distracted life. I was working 24/7, available to everyone, and I felt like I was never present really for anyone, including myself. And it was the invention of the iPhone. we can really point to 2007. Because before then, you actually had to be at this big computer or your laptop. But the minute you could take this supercomputer to the bathroom, to the bedroom, to the boardroom, on a walk, anywhere with you, you were never truly present. So I was not liking the way I was living. And in a period of 1 week, my father, who I was incredibly close to, was diagnosed with stage 4 brain cancer. And he was given 9 months to live. And the same week, I found out I was pregnant after 5 miscarriages. And it was like, I really felt like life was grabbing me by the shoulders and saying, focus on what's important. And I would go visit my dad, and I would turn off my phone. Duh. I mean, you're visiting someone that's dying that you love, and you turn off your phone, and it felt wonderful. It felt like this protected space I had with my dad. And sometimes he only had 1 good hour a day towards the end, so it was like truly like a necessity to do that. And then he did pass away, and my daughter was born days later. And my husband and I, we decided to turn off our phones every Friday night to Saturday night. Now, I should tell you, I'm Jewish. Are there any Jews in the house? Okay, but I'm not a religious Jew. There was only like 4 hands here. Wow, are there more Jews in Boston? No? Okay. Who knew? I know, I'm a blonde, blue-eyed Jew named Tiffany. It's very rare. The only people that I knew that took a full day off for Shabbat were Orthodox Jews, very religious, observant people, which was not me in any respect. But I love Jewish humor, rituals, ideas, and I do love Shabbat. But the most I ever did was a nice Friday night dinner. That's most Jews, you know, they do occasionally a nice Shabbat dinner. They light the candles and set a nice table. So we turned off all screens Friday night to Saturday night, and it was absolutely glorious. I felt more present. I laughed a lot more. The dinner on Friday night with family and friends was like the best dinner ever because no one had their phones out because they knew we were turning our phones off. I slept well, the best. I have problems sleeping, so that was huge. I had time to reflect and just be in a way that I hadn't in so long. And I can tell you now that I've been doing that practice for 10 years. It's totally changed my life. I have a 16-year-old daughter who loves it too. She's in her junior year of high school. And every week she says, I'm so grateful I'm having a day of rest. In our modern society, a day of rest is no screens. Because these screens are a conduit to so much. Their work, their news, their pleasure. But when pleasure entails taking a picture, putting a filter, writing a caption, and checking how it did, that's work too. We don't ever have a time off. And I don't like it that people feel like it's inevitable that we live in a 24/7 world. There are some, very few people that really need to be available 24/7, but most of us have made ourselves available 24/7, and it's not a healthy way to live. And I can tell you, for 10 years doing a weekly practice of turning off all screens, I feel like I got my soul back. For one day a week, I am not being influenced by every friggin' thought in the universe coming at me on the news, on social media, from every text. Do you know that it takes 23 minutes to recover from a text notification to doing what you were doing? When I learned that, I text a lot less. Is it really that important that you are going to interrupt the flow of someone else for 23 minutes? So I just finished writing a book that just came out called 24/6, The Power of Unplugging One Day a Week. It both has my own story. I have a lot of practical advice about how to get your partner to do this, your kids to do this, the boss to do it, all of that. And also, as a woman in tech, I have a lot of proposals for the tech industry because I don't believe mothers would have invented a tool that took away all eye contact. Eye contact is the most important tool women have. We're constantly connecting and reading people and understanding how people are really doing, because 50% of what people tell you is what they're telling you, and the other 50% is their body language. We're losing it. One of the key elements of being human is our empathy and eye contact, and it's going away because everyone's heads are down all the time. So in my book, I also have proposals for the tech industry, mostly created by white men with communication issues. And they are creating the communication tools for the whole planet. When I started the Webbies, there was a handful of people online. Now there's over half the planet's online. And it's going to be a very short time before the rest of the half of the planet is online. And I really hope that we can bake in better practices so we don't make the same mistakes twice. How many of you do yoga? How many of you meditate? Beautiful. I do both of those, and they've brought great balance back into my life. I'm not Hindu or Buddhist, but I have great respect for those traditions, and I do those practices. And I want a tech Shabbat, which is what I call it in my book, to be something that's available to everyone, Jewish, not Jewish, atheist, wherever you fall. The idea of a Sabbath or a Shabbat used to be baked into every culture and tradition, and it's evaporated from our 24/7 society. So I propose to bring it back with my book 24/6. I'm going to be doing a book signing afterwards. It's been very exciting on book tour because I've now had about 30 events in the last 2 months. Every different group I speak to, everyone feels like there's something deeply disconnected at the core of all this connecting. So we have an incredible panel today about how to bring that back. I'm really excited to bring up our next panelist. But that's the end of what I had to say. Thank you. Sorry, that felt much more dramatic than I originally intended, but God, I'm like, ugh. I really feel like, remember how when life was shaking me by the shoulders? I feel like I want to shake society by the shoulders right now and go, everyone's looking down. Do we want to live this way? I think the one last thing I say is that if everyone could just sit and think for a moment of what do you wish you had more time to do? Everyone has that list. And everyone in my family writes that list down and we fill our tech Shabbats with that. And it's our favorite day of the week. We read, we cook, we nap, we watercolor, I play ukulele. We take walks. We just exist in a very analog way that we're missing today. So with that, let me bring up our fabulous women to the stage. First, we have Stephanie Humphrey, who's the technology contributor to a nationally syndicated daytime talk show, Strahan, Sarah, and Kiki. Please come to the stage and join me in welcoming her. And then next, to complete our panel, we have Mary Laura Pilpot. She is the author of I Miss You When I Blink, I love that title, a nationally best-selling memoir and essays. Her writing has appeared in the New York Times, the Paris Review, Oprah, and her book was just named one of the NPR's best books of 2019. Okay, ladies, what do you think about all of this?
Look at all these people.
I know. Stephanie.
Hello?
Okay, I just want to make sure.
Hello, check.
Hello, okay.
What tips do you have? I mean, you're a technology contributor. You're thinking about this all the time.
All the time. And it is very, very difficult to push it to the side and sort of forget. So when I was thinking about that question, I tried to make the tips as simple as possible because we are trying to simplify. So number one, no notifications.
Yes.
I don't have any notifications enabled on my phone at all.
None. I don't either.
None.
Has anyone else turned off all notifications? It's life-changing.
All notifications.
Try
I'm
it,
telling
everyone.
You. It. I cannot have my phone pinging every 5 minutes because an email came in or somebody liked, you know, my selfie or whatever the case might be. I just cannot do it. And I have my phone in my hand enough anyway that, you know, I'm checking emails, I'm looking at social media, so I don't need the added pressure of the notifications telling me and ordering me really like Pavlov's dog basically to pick this phone up. So no notifications,
you know,
is the rule.
You know, one thing on that for some people that have been like, well, what if my daughter or I have a friend who had a special needs child, what? And I said, you can actually set it on your phone so you could just get notifications from one person.
Yep.
And most people don't know that, but there's a hack. I've listed all these hacks because there's a way to do that if anyone's interested. Some people might say, what if it's just one and you can
Well,
do
I
that.
Still can get, obviously, text messages and phone calls, but the rest of the electronic communication is cut off. So social media, emails, any other apps or functions like that, no notifications. Two, I take advantage of what's already available to me. So on the iPhone, there's a whole screen time section. But within that screen time section, there's a functionality called downtime. Because what I found for me, because I'm sort of a night owl, and I tend to wake up in the middle of the night with ideas, or, you know, I sleep with my television on, which is probably also bad. So I might hear something on TV and wake up. But I recently I had found that I was waking up in the middle of the night, and I would immediately roll over and grab my phone.
Oh.
Since I was awake, let me just see what's happening on the phone. You know what I mean? And it was like, why am I doing this? It's 3:30. There's nothing happening on my phone that I need to know about. But reflex, you just reach over and you grab the phone. So with downtime, you can basically disable everything on the phone between a certain point. So from midnight to 5 a.m., I cannot access apps. I cannot, you know, I can still get phone calls if I need to for emergencies, but that's it. And obviously, you know, you can disable it and start doing this if you want to, but just that extra step keeps me from bothering with the whole thing.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people say to me, what about emergencies? And we actually have a landline in our house still. Does anyone still have landlines here?
Not have a landline.
They're really good for natural disasters, which in California we get many. You should have a landline for like a million other reasons and to find your lost cell phone. But really good if you really want to turn off your phone completely during the night, which makes you sleep better, and really good for doing a tech Shabbat. So I love that you said that. Yeah, and the notifications, that phone is a conduit to too much.
It's way too much. Then Hootsuite is a scheduling tool, because I have to be on social media all the time, and, you know, content is that thing when you're building your brand, you have to be putting content out there. So I curate a lot of articles and different things, and I schedule them so that they go out through the day. So if you were following me at Tech Life Steph, you would think I was very, very active on social media. Wow, she posts so much content. Look at all these articles. They're scheduled. I don't have time. I actually don't want to be on my phone all the time.
Right.
I really don't. So I try.
How often do you, like, because I use one of those services too, but sometimes that takes a long time too. How much time do you spend prepping?
So every day, because it's tech content, you need to be kind of following it every day. I usually spend roughly an hour to 90 minutes, maybe 2 hours if I find something really interesting, scrolling my Twitter list specifically for tech. So I have a separate Twitter list that has all of my tech resources that I go to, the tech crunches and the Mashables of the world. And I'll scroll through looking for content that I think people will find interesting.
Mm.
I always read the article, because you should always read the article before you share.
Yeah.
You know, do not tweet based on a headline. So I read the articles and then I put them in Hootsuite to schedule, add my little comment or question or whatever. And so it usually takes 90 minutes to 2 hours every night.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a lot of time.
It's a lot of time, but I kind of look at that as part of my job.
Yeah, that is part
of
your job.
People kind of expect me to
pull it down.
Whatever the latest
thing is.
You
concentrate it into that time. You're not doing it all day.
No, I'm not doing it all day. I mean, well, I'm on social media all day for other reasons, but that is my time that I set aside to actually curate what I want to post for the next.
And I think you're bringing up a really good point, which is that in so many ways, technology blurred every boundary, so you could work from anywhere. There's no boundaries between work and play. I think what you're going to hear today is we need to bring some boundaries back.
That's right.
I have a boundary around my tech Shabbat. You have a boundary around your social media time. And Mary Laura.
Yeah.
Talk to us about, I mean, being a type A, we talked earlier, you would consider yourself a type A person.
Hardcore, man.
Hardcore. Triple type A. Triple A.
A plus.
A plus.
That's what I'm going for.
And what, tell me how you've wrestled with this idea of being that and unplugging.
It's tough. I'm really delighted that the Conference for Women put us together.
Me too.
Because I love your book and I love what you're advocating and all those tips you just gave us. And I feel a little bit like sort of an odd addition to this.
No.
But in a way it works, and here's why. So this is a memoir. It's not a how-to. It's a story of my life as a perfectionist, really, a type A, gotta get things right kind of person. Tells the story of how I became a little baby perfectionist. I figured out very early in my life, or I perceived, that when I got good grades, I got love and approval and attention. And I took that philosophy into adulthood for quite a while and felt like as long as I was succeeding, I was earning the air I breathe. So I became this very checklist-driven person. Does anybody in here identify, maybe if not as a perfectionist,
just a little,
someone who likes to get things
everyone's
right? Okay.
Hands gonna go, yeah.
Hello, friends. So you understand that if you are that way, there is a tendency to want to finish everything you start. So anything you commit to, you've got to finish it. And not just finish it, but be the best at it and do the best you've ever done at it, which means the longer you live and the more you commit to things and the more roles you take on in your life, the more things you have to finish. So one of the things that I learned in my journey, which you can read about or we can talk about it in the book signing line, is it's just as important to choose what you won't have in your life as what you will. Just as important to choose what you will not have in your life as what you will have in your life. And I had to disconnect and quit some things that weren't working for me. And that's a philosophy that, works on a big scale, like quitting a job that's no longer working well for you, quitting a relationship that's no longer working well for you, or quitting a habit that's not working for you. And one of the habits that I've had for years is scrolling through Twitter right before I go to bed, as if I'm going to get to the bottom of Twitter.
Like, it never happens.
I have to finish Twitter.
Right, if I just scroll long enough, I'm going to get to the one that goes, you did it, you're done. Twitter's empty. So let's do a thing. Repeat after me. I cannot finish the internet.
I cannot finish the internet.
But being a perfectionist and being someone who likes to finish everything and do a good job, anytime I disconnect or I quit something, I have this little sense of failure in the back of my mind. Like, oh, you couldn't do everything.
So I switch. Yeah.
So when I'm reading your book and taking your advice and unplugging, I sort of have to accept my perfectionism and talk myself into it by going, this is success, actually. It is successful to choose what I won't spend my time on.
Yes, that's a beautiful...
I'm not failing to do everything. I'm succeeding at choosing what I want to do.
I love that because I think... first, I want to say that no one's on their phone here, and thank you. I was at that morning panel, and so many people were on their phones, and this is really nice. You're all very present and with us, and we appreciate that. But I think the framing that you're talking about is really important because a lot of people are scared to turn off their phones. I don't know where that's a deep thing because it is about being loved and validated and feeling important. But I think it's just as important to be able to just be with yourself and the people that you love right in front of you. And I think we're forgetting how to be truly present. But the framing that you're talking about is it's not what's being taken away from you, it's actually what you get.
Yeah.
And when you think about, oh my God, I get my presence back, and this other miraculous thing happens. The online world fuels a sense of want. You want to buy, you want to do, you want to click, you want to check the notification, you want to see if another stressful news story happened. You're bum, bum, want, want, want. When you turn it off, this amazing thing happens. You stop wanting. And you appreciate what's right in front of you. I feel like my texture bots are full with gratitude. Because when you're in online, I mean, I love fashion. I'm always wanting to buy and check out and be productive and type A and make things happen. I turn it off. I'm just suddenly very happy with just chilling, looking at my garden. That never happens to me during the week because I'm staring at my device.
It's much easier to be grateful when you don't have comparison staring you in the face. And there's so much, I mean, social media is all comparison. Oh,
and just the teens today, I mean, they just took away the like feature. Did you hear that?
On Instagram?
Okay. There's one thing I'll say about teens today. Our older daughter, Odessa, when she was in fifth grade 6 years ago, we were the only family at our public school that wasn't getting our fifth grader a smartphone.
Oh, my God.
And people said things to me like, you're going to leave her out of the fabric of society. I was like, she's 10. And we definitely felt like outliers, but we were just trusting our gut. I make a lot of films about neuroscience, that maybe getting a supercomputer to a malleable brain isn't such a good idea to create an addiction that early. Mm-hmm. So 2 years ago, I learned of this organization called Wait Until 8. Does anyone know of it?
Yeah.
I want you all to know of it. An Austin mom started a pledge called, I want to wait until 8th grade to get my kid a smartphone. We waited till 9th grade, personally. Over 30,000 families in America have signed it.
Yeah.
Because they knew it existed. And they were like, there are others. The entire country of France has banned smartphones in schools until 15. Because they see all the neuroscience research.
Go, France.
It's all the mental health issues. We're having a crisis because teenage suicide attempts has doubled for girls since the smartphone came out.
That's right. Mm.
So let's look at that data and go, do they need a smartphone to exacerbate every insecurity about feeling loved and validated when you're at your most insecure stage of life, which is being a teen?
Yeah. And I talk about that in addition to my on-air responsibilities. I have a workshop called Till Death Do You Tweet. So I talk to students, I talk to parents, and I talk to professionals about that very thing, about how to be better digital citizens, mm-hmm. and how that manifests itself through social media. And I tell parents all the time, wait as long as you can. You know, your kid's going to be coming to you, all my other friends are there, and everybody has a phone. You can get them a flip phone first
flip
if you need to communicate with them. But hold off as long as possible, because once they get that access, it really is kind of a Pandora's box for young people. And I've spoken to enough students at this point to know that they haven't taken the time to consider what that damage might be, how this might be affecting them. And then I also let parents and just adults know that you have to cut yourself and your young people a little bit of slack when it comes to this whole thing, because it is not just as simple as saying, put your phone down, put your phone away. There are people that are way smarter than all of us whose sole mission is to collect a paycheck from these platforms and figure out how to keep us on them as long as possible. So they're tracking how fast you scroll. And if you're scrolling and you're mindlessly scrolling, but then you slow down and you're like, oh, that's interesting. The algorithm's going to serve you up more of that thing to keep you on the platform longer. Mm-hmm. You know, if you put the phone down for a minute and it seems like you're getting distracted, all of a sudden you get a ping. Someone liked your photo. They control all of that. And I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but they actually do control every single thing about your interaction with that particular platform, because their job is to keep you on the platform for as long as possible.
Well, and even taking that yes to everything you said, there are thousands of engineers and behavioral scientists, and their sole job is to study your behaviors.
That's right.
To make you click on things to buy more. And then this is the second part that's much more concerning. Make you think a certain way. As we saw with the last election, things were served up, content that wasn't true, to make you vote a certain way. I recommend you all see a documentary on Netflix called The Great Hack. It goes into the Cambridge Analytica scandal.
It was so good.
It's huge, because all of your data, all these services we get for free, like Facebook and Gmail and Google Maps, free is the most expensive business model the ever Faustian bargain we made, because we are the product and they are selling our data to foreign companies, to marketers. And so there's a lot that needs to happen on the regulation level. Government needs to understand. When you see the congressional hearings with Zuckerberg, like, they don't even know what they're talking about. So that needs to happen. The citizens need to know. Watch The Great Hack. And then there's personal regulation you can do, like what we're saying, if take the boundary back and say, actually, I need a day off or however much time off, so I have the perspective of what I'm plugging into all the time.
Yeah.
And our kids need to, when you hear my daughter speak, and I brought her on book tour, because people can't believe a teen would want to be offline. They're under a lot of pressure too, but they're just never offline to know it. And when all the parents are saying, put down your phone, guess what the kids are watching? Their parents on the phone all the time, and parenting is just modeling behavior. Mm-hmm. So unless you do it as a family, that's not going to get implemented.
They get such relief from it. My son, my oldest child is 16, and he goes to this summer camp all summer, every year.
No tech.
And they have no phones there. And this year, for the first time, he became a counselor. And when you become a counselor, they do ask you to keep your phone because...
Emergency.
Emergency things. You're in charge, he's in charge of like 10 little bitty boys.
Right.
So if he needs to call somebody, and he said it was such a bummer to get the phone back in the summer because all of a sudden this idyllic escape that he had had all summer long became part of the real world again. And I get that because one of my own personal boundaries, like one of the ways I sort of enforce my own unplugging is going outside and going anywhere I can go where there's no cell signal. I wrote part of this book at a writer's colony in the middle of Tennessee that you can't get a signal if you stand on the mountain and go like this. But I also go, I hike, not every day, but a few times a week. And I go to this park where there is no signal. And the only other living things I see while I am outside are animals and snails and trees and deer and skunks. And if you're an anxious person, you sort of hinted at this earlier. If you are an anxious person, one of the things that you do, or I shouldn't say you, that I do, is I absorb the anxieties of everyone around me. So I've got all the stuff I'm anxious about.
Or if you're a sensitive person.
Or a sensitive person. So I've got all the stuff I'm anxious about. Then I, go online, and everything that everyone else is upset about is upsetting me too. But if you go outside, if you get somewhere in nature where you can't see traffic lights, and all you can see are animals, the greatest anxiety you will see is some squirrel fighting another squirrel for acorns. There's all sorts of science behind this. It brings your blood pressure down. It encourages more expansive thinking. So if you have to, physically separate yourself from the device and go out
in nature. I love that. And there's... you can't actually search places without Wi-Fi for trips, which I really recommend. But, I mean, I'm looking to... Has anyone ever gone down the Grand Canyon? It's the most incredible trip. I did it when I was a kid, and I'm like, that's a trip we could go on as a family, and there's no Wi-Fi.
Or just drop your phone
in the canyon. Like that. going out, I worry. I used to love going on a plane because that was like my time to think because I love staring out the window and just seeing the expanse of the windows. But now there's Wi-Fi. I'm like, ugh.
But where else? I'm not paying for that.
No,
there's no Wi-Fi for me on the plane because I'm cheap. So,
can you talk about the perception? You said you're on social media. I think are you on, Mary Laura? Are you also on?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Follow us all on Twitter. What do you think about? And you kind of pointed this to like the perception of the fabulous life and the fabulousness, just everything's fabulous all the time, and the health of society for that.
It is. It's that comparison being the thief of joy, but it's also that fear of missing out. It's funny, before we came on stage, I was like, I haven't posted anything yet. I haven't posted anything since I've been here yet. Like literally in a session about unplugging, I'm holding my phone up, like putting something on my Instagram story.
It's that
idea that if I'm not letting everybody know what I'm doing and how great my life is, then I'm losing versus, all of the other pictures that you see that may or may not be grounded in reality, that may or may not be even true. Because people are only posting the highlight reels, of course. And so it gets to you. And it's very, very difficult to sort of break that that thought process in your head that you need to be connected. There's no reason you need to be on social media posting pictures of your cat. There is really, there's no reason.
But if it's part of your, I'm sure like on book tour, I was much more of a Twitter person and the publisher's like, you need to get on Instagram. So suddenly I'm on Instagram. And actually, as a filmmaker, I like a lot of things. They just take so much time. I want to post a story. I'm like, oh my God, an hour just went by. I have so many other things to do. But then you get all this validation, and then...
And that's the thing.
But that's what's so cool about your theory of unplugging for a day. What you're doing is... You're giving yourself a weekly chance
to reset.
At reinvention.
It's like intermittent fasting.
Because if you do, if you do have a day where you're like, oh, I set no boundaries today, I stared at my phone the whole day, you know that every Friday night or every whatever it is,
it resets
you're taking your timeline and giving it a new start.
Yeah, and it definitely recalibrates, and I talk about that in the book. And I also talk about all the other things I do the other 6 days, and I want to share one with you because it's been huge. Is I used to wake up to the New York Times app. Anyone else does that? Or news app. And I would get so stressed out. I would wake up to stress. I would wake up and look at it. And I would be, and especially since the president became in office, it was like my cortisol level was just every morning because I, you know, women's rights stuff. And so I thought, I don't want Trump to wake up my day. So I went and bought something called the 5-Minute Journal. It's not my book, but I love it. It's for people that even don't love to journal, and I love to journal. And it asks me 3 things. So this is what I do. I go down to my coffee and I say to myself, don't look at the phone. Don't look at the phone. It's on airplane mode. And it says, what are 3 things you're grateful for? And don't write the same thing down. Write specific things and you'll never repeat yourself. And then it says, what are 3 things that would make today great? And I have to think about my day. What's today? What could be great? And then at the end of the day, you come back to it. What are 3 amazing things that happened that day? And they're often very different than what you started with. And then it says, what's 1 thing you wish you did differently? So a little reflection. I am telling you, it's like love loafs to my day now, opposed to the stress I used to feel by ending and starting my day with my phone. It's made such a difference to frame my day instead of letting the outside world frame my day. Mm-hmm. And I think that this notion of reflection, we're creating a society where there's no valuing reflection or your inner world. Every great wisdom practice says silence. Now I try, because I listen to a lot of podcasts, I try to go, no news, no podcasts. I'm just going to be silent for 2 hours because every wisdom practice from every culture says, have inner reflection. Make room for silence. Just be. And in our society today, we're always flipping our wrists and looking at the phone.
You've got to have silence to create art.
Oh, yes.
You have to have silence to have the sort of expansive thinking that leads to breakthroughs in any industry, in science, in the academia,
in
no matter what you do. Yes. You have to have, it's just like when you sleep, you have to have REM sleep where you drop into a deeper level. When you think, you have to have
deep thinking
time. And deep thinking time cannot happen without an expanse of protected time. And what you mentioned earlier about looking at how much time you spend on things and how in your family you make a list of what you wish you were spending more time on. If you do that math and you make a list, this is something I kind of went through when I was sort of down and out and very depressed because I was unhappy in my life. I did the math on how much time do I spend on activities that are not meaningful to me and with people I don't actually care about.
Mm.
And when you are super, super connected online, you're interacting with a lot of strangers,
yeah,
a lot of people you don't even know. Very often I find myself mentally dragged into arguments I don't even care about. And if I do that math, and I did that math and looked at, like, okay, here's all the time I'm spending on things that I really don't care about, and here are all the things I'm not doing that I wish I was doing, the numbers will show you what you need to do.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have a moment that where the pendulum swung too far with you of being online, especially with your job?
Not yet, thankfully, because I do. I can say I always start my day with, I mean, it's my phone, but it's with my Bible app. I'm a person of faith, so literally.
Wait, what app?
My Bible app, Our Version. I use Our Version, yeah. They take you through different devotionals and different reading plans for daily prayer. So
reflection.
I do not start my day with anything else but that app.
So it's reflection.
It is. I take that moment.
That's allowed.
Yeah.
That's
the one time you can use your phone if you're actually
that's
using it to reflect.
I use the Calm app.
Before I
get out of bed, I listen to a 12-minute meditation, and I do have to like will myself not to let my thumb tap Instagram when I'm done.
Anything else. That's right. Put it away. So I do. I mean, obviously I check my email right after I'm done, but I give myself that, you know, 15-20 minutes, you know, when I wake up every day, to just ground myself in my spirituality and then whatever else comes after that.
Okay.
I will also say, too, that I actually do take advantage of the Breathe app on the Apple Watch.
Yes.
Like, it was an annoyance at first when I first got the watch. I was like, I don't want to do that. I'm breathing now. I don't need to, like, breathe. But I actually do, you know, when I get that little prompt and it says, take a moment and
and you know, and it gets you all ready and center yourself and this whole thing, and it takes you through this. I will actually stop what I'm doing and do the breathing exercise on the watch. Yeah,
that's really interesting. I just as you said that, there was one I was trying with posture, because sometimes on the computer, you know how you're just like,
yes.
I catch myself, I'm like, what am I doing? Stand up, because we don't want to evolve. We evolved, and then now we're like going into.
We have text.
We're devolving. Yes.
You know, one thing I just wanted to say before we go to Q&A to think about is having your phone out is distracting others. I used to be a smoker in a regrettable period in my 20s because my family are doctors. I was rebelling. But I know what it's like to be completely addicted. And it's a very similar feeling with the phone. But the thing I'll tell you is that when you're next time you're at a meeting or at a dinner table, put your phone in your bag, because it's like secondhand smoke. When people see your phone, they're less present. And pulling out your phone is like yawning. You do it, and everyone will do it.
Mm-hmm.
So try, at my film studio now, I have a policy where no phones on the desks. Because you know what? Even if they were on silent, we all knew when they buzzed. And it took everyone out of the meeting or whatever we were doing. So think about your phone as a distraction device for yourself and for everyone around you. Because when you're doing it, and I'm telling you, during the week, I will fall into that. You know, I'm traveling on book tour where I'm like, and then I think about it. And then the last thing I'll say is that every interaction you have knits together the fabric of our society. Whether you're buying a coffee, you're checking out at the grocery store, you're at the library or the bus stop. And right now, we are grunting our way through all of it while we're staring at our phones. Make eye contact. Ask a question. I think it's why our country is in such a divisive space, is everyone is just in their own little worlds. So there's so much we can individually do every day, knitting the fabric of our society and our presence and our humanity back in. So with that, I think we're going to take questions. There's mics right there, and right there. And you can, if you can go to the mic so everyone can hear, and you can ask it to all three of us. And I do want to take a picture of all of you to post it. Is that horrible? Can you hand me my phone? Because nobody's
of
on their
course.
Phone. It's a glorious sea of women and a couple men. Hello, man. And I am going to put, I'm going to send it to you so that you can post it too, because
it's going to
be fabulous.
You'll plug in on behalf.
I am going to take a shot of this glorious audience and us. Okay. I'll send it to you both.
Awesome.
Okay. First question. Yes. Over here.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So, first of all, a comment about your turning off the phone from Twitter. I think 2 a.m. tweet from White House became my midnight entertainment sometime. You wake up in the morning and, sorry to say that, but I could never imagine those kind of things coming from the highest office in the United States. So sometimes it's the entertainment. But you're right. I like the idea of turning off the phone. But you planned like 24 hours with no access to social media or text message. I mean, we are immigrant family. We live on WhatsApp. And how do you control your anxiety that you're missing something or there is something going on and you would not? I mean, I cannot even imagine turning my phone off on Saturday morning. My mom will have a heart attack in India.
I am telling you, I think it's the framing, like what you pointed out. The biggest word I think of all day on my tech Shabbat is I feel free. I feel free to just be and not be attached to the whole entire world. And if my mom needs to call, she calls my landline. But I don't feel any anxiety. I feel liberated. And I think we just have all not turned it off in so long. Who turned off? I mean, I've done this everywhere and hardly anyone raises their hands. Who has turned off their phone for a full day in the last month?
Ooh, look at the hands.
Ooh.
I
was like four hands. No, that's
any,
not that
I wasn't
exciting.
Yeah.
So I guess I feel like it's just been so long. We think, oh, this is now how we exist. But when I was growing up in the 70s, everyone watched, you know, the TV was on all the time. And then the pendulum swung. I mean, now it's Netflix. That's a whole other story. They're keeping you up all night. But anyways, but I think it's because we haven't done it in so long. But I don't feel the first hour I might write a couple to-do lists or things, and then it goes away on a piece of paper.
So to get there, what would be all three of you suggestion to get to that place? Okay, I would be at peace to turn off my phone for 24 hours. But the first time or the second time?
It takes practice. It's a muscle. So you're going to have to just fight through that anxiety. And maybe, you know, in preparation for that first time that you unplug, you gather a bunch of activities that you know will keep you occupied throughout the day, or make a mental list. Like, I'm going to organize my closet. I'm going to here's Monopoly for the family. Have a group of things ready to go. And frankly, you're going to have to fight through that anxiety. But I think the more you do it, and the more you see, okay, no one died, and the day is over, and now I can pick my phone back up. You know, the more you see that the world's not going to end because you don't have your phone, the more you start to appreciate, you know, that time that you're spending away from
it. Great way to put it.
And I remind myself of the things that I don't like about being online, and then I'm very grateful to be free of them. I don't like the anxiety of getting drawn into everyone's Twitter arguments. I don't like seeing a horrific news headline as soon as I wake up. There's a lot I actually don't like about being online. So when I'm reminding myself to put it away, I remind myself I'm freeing myself from all that stuff I don't like.
Mm. Thank you.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm Jasmine from San Diego. To your comment about turning off notifications. So I work full-time, and I also single parent. One of the things that I challenge with is I receive notifications constantly during my work day, and it's so distracting. My daughter is 10 years old. She is a competitive dancer, and she trains 16 hours a week. So as part of her competitive dance group, the studio sends we've got a group chat.
Oh, my God, the group
chat. The parents.
Oh, the group chat.
The group chat is the devil. It is the worst. It's just, the group chat. I'm sorry. I'm having my own personal moment up here. I hate the group chat.
Group chat. We, too, use WhatsApp. So, but I receive notifications constantly about the changing schedule. The studio calls audibles sort of, you know, two or three times a day. Mm-hmm. Change in schedule for my child. They now have to be in this room instead of that room.
Right.
Costume change. Come for the fitting. What do they call the one-on-one, like training time, schedule changes. So it's sort of like constant. And you feel like you have to be connected so that your child keeps connected. And if your child is not connected, then they're at a disadvantage because they miss out on opportunities.
Right.
Or they're not meeting the expectations with the other children who are dancing competitively with them. So do you guys have any recommendation? Because it's almost like there's an expectation for the parents to stay connected so that the child is then connected, so that the child then remains competitive with the group. Do you guys have any like suggestions or recommendations for that? I mean, it's a whole culture in itself, right? Just that expectation.
Is there a way, like, if you know that her dance schedule is going to begin when she gets out of school, like in the afternoon, that's when she switches gears to that activity. In theory, those notifications that you're getting, you could ignore up until whatever time.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
The schedule,
I'm like, sure. You pick your own time to
check. So if you say, like, at 1 o'clock every day, I will check what is going on over here and see if it affects my drive time today. Yes. And if it doesn't, I'm good.
That's a good suggestion, but sometimes they call things where, like, had I known this 2 hours earlier, I could have made my way home to grab that costume.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Like, pick a time to check them once and put that thing on mute. Seriously.
I'll
be there
agree.
When you get to it, but, you know, like I said, whatever time is a good time for you that you can adjust your schedule, you know, last minute if necessary, 1 o'clock or whenever, just check them that time and then put it on mute
and
the rest of the day.
Tell them that you're
tell
doing
them
that.
Do that too. I
tell
agree.
It loudly and in front of other parents.
Yeah, because I'm sure no one wants to get those
I don't
things
actually
all day.
Look at all 20 notifications.
Well, I would even go further.
At one, and then maybe they'll.
I would even go further and say, you know, all of these notifications all throughout my workday are too much for me, so I'm going to just check
at
3 p.m. Because people are just so loose with the texting
intrusive.
And the group chatting that I think it's something we need to, like,
it's too much.
Amplify out. It's too much for everyone. And when I turned off all my notifications, I have never missed anything because, you know, at the end of when I take a break, I go in. to the key ones and check what's happening, just like what you're saying. But
that's right.
I think we need to, and my daughter's on basketball. I've done tech Shabbats with two kids in soccer. I let the team know on Friday afternoon, see you at this field. Reminder, I'm not on my phone, and I have one friend on the team. I'm sure you have one other mom.
Sure, yeah.
That can be like your bat line for some emergency, but I let them know I'm not on the phone. And in 10 years, it's never been a problem.
Honestly, that's just inconsiderate that they would send stuff to parents
it's
like that
much.
All day.
Oh, I agree.
That's really inconsiderate. Yeah.
Agree.
It's constant. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck. That group chat.
Hi, my name is Andrea. I live in Massachusetts, Mansfield. I would tag along to that. I always silence any, or I don't know, there's a way to silence the group chats, and then I check them whenever I feel like it's time to check them because they become very noisy. But I would also, I mean, to tag along to that, I would look at the root cause, why they always have to send those. Maybe there's a planning issue. There's an email they could just send once in a while instead of chats, constant chats. What I was going to ask you guys, I made a mistake to give my then 12-year-old the phone because of the peer pressure. So he's 15 now, and he's like this all day. And we do have rules. I have a contract with him. He respects the contract. We do have rules around the dinner table, no phones. But I'm still seeing him a lot in his room chatting. So any suggestions around
that? I'd say the big one is do not allow them to put devices in their room. And even if you already did, I know a lot of people are like, oh, that ship has sailed. It hasn't sailed, because your role as a parent is to say, you know, I've looked at new research, and as a parent, my job is to change my mind if the research tells me. And the new rule in our home is that devices in a common space. All of the research of problematic areas is when that phone is in the bedroom and they're checking it all night long and not sleeping, or they're getting into trouble in chat rooms or video games. I would just say, and you know, I have a family meeting with our kids and my husband like about every 6 months, because we write up these contracts, which we do. We have everyone sign a contract. And of course it slips and slides as their needs change or schoolwork's change, and then we meet again and we go, okay, what's working, what's not? So I think presenting any kind of screen time rules is an ongoing conversation. Mm-hmm. And because a lot of parents go, oh my God, I already got my kid a smartphone. Am I doomed? I'm like, no. And just say, you know, this isn't, let me get you a flip phone, and we need to really relook at this because your grades are going down or you're on the phone all the time. Like, that's a parent's role, and we're all living an experiment, and we're in a Frankenstein moment, and it's gotten out of control.
Thank you. That's amazing suggestions.
Teenagers also hate the idea that they are being manipulated by adults.
Yeah.
It can be helpful to share articles and literature with teenagers that show how all these companies are manipulating them and trying to make them get addicted. I have even said to my kids before, you know, the people who make this stuff think you're stupid.
Great.
Can you believe they think you're so stupid that you are going to fall for what they're doing? And they're like, I'm not stupid.
Right.
Like, exactly. So give me your phone. I would just reiterate, you know, it's wonderful that you have a contract that because that's what I recommend to parents all the time, but also to revisit it often.
Yes.
So if the rules need to change, they need to change.
Yes.
It's your house. You're still paying for the phone. Yeah. You get
Thank
to make
you.
The rules.
Yes. And the idea of like bringing up the actual research, they're smart enough to actually, I'll highlight it for them. You know, this is what's coming out of Harvard or whatever. Do you have any sites that you recommend? Like PubMed, I know.
Oh my gosh. Those,
what did she say?
Any sites?
It's websites where the research is posted or any.
Yeah, if you go to 246sixlife.com, I have all those kind of articles and hacks to, you know, have auto responses on your text, because that's something we didn't talk about. But you know how like when you're driving, it'll say, don't disturb, I'm driving. Well, you can do a hack into that so that it says, I'm not looking at text, because people feel like you need to respond to a text in a second. Mm-hmm. So anyways, I have a lot of little hacks, or like boomerang, don't send emails on the weekend, you know, all sorts of stuff like that.
Thank you, ladies. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Say your
24, the numbers, 24, and then sixlife.com. And go under resources, and I have Wait Till 8th. I have this great group at Harvard that has all this research. I have all these sites that you can check out to show your kids.
Before we do our last quick question, I just want to point out, we will be, or at least the two of us will be at the book signing thing in the exhibit hall.
This.
If you have more questions or more stuff you want to
talk about. I will actually be at a round table later on today. We're kind of not talking about this, but I can certainly answer other questions
what
about this.
What time is your
I think it starts at 3 or 3:30.
What is it called?
It's in
what
the
is
schedule.
The name of it?
Round table. It's Till Death You Tweet.
Okay.
Oh, great.
You can find us later in other places.
And in a totally separate area of my life, I do a lot of work in gender equality and reproductive rights, and I'm showing my film called 50-50, The 10,000-Year History of Women in Power, and I think it happens at, anyone know? 3.
It's in the schedule.
I'm screening my movie. It's 20 minutes at 3, and then we're going to have a great discussion about getting to 50-50. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm going to cede the last question, to Talisa. For what I think is going to be a better question than I would have asked. So instead, I'm going to make only the point that with a little bit of age comes the power to delegate. And I have been delegating my phrase of to my clients. I have clients. It's not a social media thing for me. It's my clients. If you're working, I'm working. And instead, I forward things to my associate who is paid to answer those questions and make sure I only get what I need.
That's awesome.
But now I'm ceding my question to Talisa.
How you doing? My name is Talisa. I'm 29, so I'm a millennial. And I have a question about the age gap of generations. And so I came into technology at a point where we didn't have the cell phones, we didn't have the computers, we had the Razor phones, and then we just jumped into the iPhones, as you mentioned. So I'm finding it actually that my generation doesn't have a bad, we're not doing a bad job of like unplugging, you know, we keep it on do not disturb. But I'm finding that the generation of like my mom, she gets on her phone and she doesn't know necessarily what fake news is. So we were able to get on the links. We know what is credible. We know what, you know, what to hold accountable. But I need a suggestion as to letting her know that, you know, I'm not on my phone all the time. So when you call me 5 times about a news article that may necessarily be fake and that this is not urgent.
Let you take that one.
As I said, I'm 29, so you can just imagine, you know, we are very in touch with what's real, what's not real, but I don't think my mom does.
And
she's actually in her young 50s, so not to put that out there, but I need a better way of letting her know that we're not on our phones all the time. I actually seen it on my Facebook, the link that you're talking about, and I need to kind of educate when things are not urgent to kind of call in, hey, Talisa. So, yeah.
You're probably going to lose that battle. I'm just saying. But I would say Smart News is an app that does...
what is it called?
Smart News is an app that does a decent job of looking at a particular issue from different angles. So they'll provide different media outlets that have written about that particular story. And so you get all of the perspectives and hopefully can come to a more truthful understanding of whatever that thing is. So you could have her download that app. But as far as like having her not bug you all the time,
And my, you know, my grandmother, she's in her 80s and she has Facebook. So just imagine how often, you know, they're commenting, tagging, and it's not my generation. You know, we kind of just, like, call each other and say, hey, what are you doing? But my grandmother's like, Talisa, look at this article. So you just, as you mentioned, you know, take off the notifications. But it's becoming that we're missing the real news for all of the fake news. So I think that I'm just trying to find that gap of, like, staying in touch, but, like, ignoring because we're kind of tired of, like, getting...
And then maybe if there's a time during the, you know, Sundays, if you call your grandma on Sundays, like, grandma, on Sundays, I will address all of these issues and all of your concerns about these things.
Like, they know they can talk to you.
Pick a time and say, this is when we're going to sit down and have this conversation, but during the week, I can't do it. And set that boundary.
A boundary.
It's going to be tough.
Have a rich
to have to set that boundary.
Face-to-face boundaries and let them know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the word. That's a good word to close with, is bring some more boundaries back. Boundaries. I want to thank this amazing panel on all of your questions. Thank you so much. And we will be going down to the book signing and have a great rest of your conference.
Yay.